Hello, welcome. This is Art Speak Radio, and I'm Maria Vasquez Boyd with you on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. Thank you so much for tuning in and making us a part of your day. Thank you. And for those listening online at kkfi.org, hello. We love you. Today we bring a very special installment of Art Speak Radio. We're going to begin with, where were you when John Lennon was shot? And our contributors for that story, we have Casey Don Roush, John Thompson Todd, also known as the Radio God, and Phil Keenan, who will contribute their stories of where they were in that specific moment, December 8th, 1980, on that fateful day when John was murdered by a crazed fan. And also in the second half, we have gallery director, owner Tim Morrison with the 2010 Gallery, and he's going to be talking with us in the second part of the show. So let's get started with where were you when John Lennon was murdered? December 8, 1980. That was the fateful day John was murdered by a crazed fan as he tried to enter the New York apartment, his New York apartment. On the night he died, John and his wife Yoko had been having a night on the town. And after enjoying dinner, they decided to pop back to their apartment to say goodbye to their son, Sean. Now, usually, the couple would have got out of their limo using a secure entrance to the Dakota Building in Strawberry Fields, but on this occasion, they stepped out onto 72nd Street. Mark Chapman was there waiting for the 40-year-old and his wife. Lennon and Chapman had met. The singer had signed an autograph for him earlier that day. And after months of stalking the Beatles star, Chapman had flown for one last time to New York from Hawaii. He'd made the trip several times over in preceding months and lay in wait with a Charter Arms 38 pistol, which he'd smuggled in his luggage. He shot at the musician five times, four of which hit his target. When police arrived, Lennon was lying face down in a pool of blood. NYPD officer Tony Palma picked up Lennon with the help of his partner, Herb Fraunberger, and dragged him to their squad car. Meanwhile, Chapman, 25 at the time, calmly removed his coat and waited to be arrested. A team of doctors then spent 15 minutes trying to resuscitate Lennon in the hospital, but his injuries proved too much and he died at 11 p.m. Chapman was later sentenced to 20 years in prison. He admitted he'd funded his stalking trips by selling a Norman Rockwell painting. He bragged at the time of his arrest that it had involved incredible stalking and incredible planning. His reason for orchestrating such tragedy? He wanted the bright light of fame, of infamy. Notoriety was there. I couldn't resist it. 30 years on, Yoko still lives in the Dakota Building. And we're going to turn this over to Casey Don Roush, who is a musician, singer, songwriter, and host of River Trade Radio on Sunday here on KKFI. Welcome, my friend.
Thank you, Maria.
We're so happy that that you're here with us. So you're going to share your story of where you were, and you were very young at the time.
I was.
And Casey's also going to perform live for us. So
my family and I were living in deep southeast Texas, near Houston, but in a very small town in December of 1980. And I had just turned 6 years old just a couple weeks before. But I was already very in love with the music of the Beatles and very aware of who John Lennon was, largely due to my mother's old records. We listened to her 45s a lot, we being my sister and I, and a few of the full-length albums that she had. But also I come from a long line of music makers, many of whom also really appreciated the music of the Beatles. And so I grew up hearing some of my uncles play songs like Norwegian Wood and Here Comes the Sun, George's, of course. And so my love of the Beatles and all that they were came very early. And I realized as I was preparing for this show that my love of their music kind of happened chronologically as well, as far as it started with the early stuff and those old 45s of Please Please Me and things like that. And as I grew into middle school, then I started discovering things like the Magical Mystery Tour and the White Album. But when I came home from school, I was in kindergarten in December of 1980, and found my mother weeping at the table. And when I asked her why, she told me that John Lennon had been killed. And in my young mind, I just, it was probably one of my first experiences with death that I can recall of having some kind of identification of a person and knowing that, understanding now that they're no longer going to be around. And I remember very clearly sitting at the table and crying with my mother, in part because I understood what was happening and I understood that no longer would we have the music of John Lennon. You know, well, of course we do because his music lives on, but, you know, moving forward as far as new music and things. And also because I saw my mother's pain and I reacted to that as well. And my love for the Beatles just continued to grow from there. Both my daughter and one of my sister's daughters was born to the music of the Beatles. So very special to me. So I brought my guitar along, and we talked about playing one of John's songs. And so I really put a lot of thought into which song I might want to play too. There's so many that speak so dearly to me. And I was reflecting on, well, what were those, you know, as I was around 12 years old, really starting to dig into the Beatles. My sister was taping on a Houston radio show. They were syndicating Breakfast with the Beatles, and she'd tape every one of those. And then I'd sneak in and steal her tapes. I don't know if she ever knew that. So she does now. And there were songs like off the White Album, like Your Blues, that, you know, spoke to me in my early teenage years. Yes, I'm lonely, wanna die, you know, hard, heavy stuff. And there were songs like Give Peace a Chance that I started playing when I was really picking up my guitar at 12 and 13 years old and sitting in my bedroom for hours on end. And one of the funniest stories I can remember is trying to sing I'm a Loser, and I was not a natural born singer, and sounding like I'm a loser, you know. So I actually revisited that one, and I decided, no, that's still not going to be the one I play. But from the same album, in my early days of guitar playing, I always loved the song Babies in Black, and I thought it was kind of appropriate for you know, focusing on the passing of John Lennon as well. So would you like me to do that now? All right. Oh, dear, what can I do? Babies in black, and I'm feeling blue. Tell me, oh, what can I do? She thinks of him, and so she dresses in black. Though he'll never come back, she's dressed in black. Oh dear, what can I do? Baby's in black, and I'm feeling blue. Tell me, oh, what can I do? I think of her, but she thinks only of him. Though it's only a whim, she thinks of him. No, how long will it take till she sees the mistake she has made? Dear, what can I do? Baby's in black, and I'm feeling blue. Tell me, oh, what can I do? Oh, how long will it take till she sees the mistake she has made? Tell me, oh, what can I do?
Thank you. Thank you, Casey. You know, as I mentioned, you are the host and producer of River Trade Radio here on KKFI, and that's on Sundays
from 9 to 11 a.m.
Very good, yeah. Also, if you want to give our listeners more information about the many groups that you perform with, I know there's several that I did not mention. Please share that.
My main bag these days is the Country Duo with Marco Pasqualini, and we travel all over this beautiful country making music and have just released an album that we did live at Sun Studio in Memphis, Tennessee.
It's a great album, by the way.
Thank you. We're very proud of it. It's a soundtrack to a PBS television show, The Sun Studio Sessions, which is still airing across the country as well. And then when I'm in town here, Marco and I both join five-piece honky-tonk band called The Naughty Pines, and we play every second Tuesday down at the Ship. Those are my main bags.
That's really fun. I mean, either band, they're just a lot of fun.
Thank you.
So I want to thank you so much for coming in and sharing your story with us, because, you know, everyone has a perspective, a point in time where they really experience something differently than the next person. So thank you so much for sharing your story with us.
Thanks
and your beautiful songs.
Thank you.
Any last words that you want to mention?
I think that it's incredible that this person who made music his way of life had such a great impact on so many people, including a six-year-old little girl in deep Southeast Texas. It's pretty powerful.
Beautiful. Thank you. Thank you so much. And we're going to be right back with ArtSpeak Radio after this. And you're tuned in to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. This is ArtSpeak Radio, and I'm Maria Vasquez Boyd, your host every week, noon to one on 90.1 FM KKFI. I already said that. Anyway, today we're presenting a special edition of ArtSpeak Radio, Where Were You When John Lennon Was Shot? And up next, we have Phil Keenan, who is the staging director at Heartland Men's Chorus. And he's also at Michael Forbes and owner, creative director at Phil Keenan's Big Show. Now, Keenan is a playwright and director, and his original work, Never Ever After, and Huck Finn and the Quest for the Winding Wind, they both premiered in the Kansas City Fringe Festival. Welcome, my friend Phil.
Thank you, Marie. It's great to be here.
Honey, it's been too long.
Yes, it has.
It has just been too long.
It takes something like this to drag us out.
Huh? I know. Well, you're welcome back anytime. But, you know, I want to say congratulations to you for the original work that has won a lot of
accolades,
notoriety. You know, for the Fringe Festival. So we look forward to what the next Fringe
Festival. Coming up in July, and then we're rounding out the cycle next October, just off Broadway Theater.
Really?
Yeah.
So will you come back and talk to us about that?
I would love that.
Honey, you can come back anytime. You know
Thank you.
My friend. So where were you when John Lennon was shot?
Well, you know, this is actually an expanded version of a Facebook post that I put out about 4 years ago, and then have since expanded on it. So I was a 20-year-old junior at Marymount College in Salina, Kansas. Marymount was a small, private, liberal arts Catholic college operated by the Sisters of St. Joseph. And most of my college instructors, with the exception of my theater and arts instructors, were nuns. And they were strong, intelligent, and progressive women. And since December 8th is the Feast of the Immaculate Conception, a Catholic holy day of obligation, we had no classes. Add to that, it was a Monday, which meant that we were well into a college three-day weekend, compounded by a heavy two-day snowstorm that finally stopped that Monday morning. Well, we'd been isolated in our dorms during the storm, and the expectation was that we would be studying for finals. Well, the halls were hardly quiet. What with the game playing and loud music from our stereos and general rivalry throughout the halls. Cabin fever was finally alleviated that morning, and we burst out of our dorms and trekked to the castle-like administration building to attend mass and brunch afterwards in the cafeteria. You know, immediately following, we put our cafeteria trays to another use to spend the afternoon sledding down the hill across the street. This was always a big, spontaneous winter event attended by college kids and faculty and the nuns, and since this was a holiday, well over 400 people occupied the hill that afternoon. And then that night, the guy's dorm hosted the annual big Christmas party. And I was the president of the campus programming council, which meant that I had the responsibility of planning every planned or unplanned party on the campus. So I was pretty busy that weekend. And I had to play Santa Claus at the party to do whatever. And I, for the life of me, can't remember if I was handing out gifts or shots or beers. And but I was generally the host of the party. And it was just the climax of a wonderful weekend. And at 10:30, I went upstairs to my room to get out of the Santa suit and change into some other party attire. And my radio stereo was on, and it was always on. And as I was removing my padding, the music abruptly stopped, just jarringly stopped. And the DJ broke in the programming, and he was out of breath, and he was hardly able to control his emotions to deliver the news. And I just sat on my bed, half undressed, trying to grasp some sense of reality as the DJ struggled to relay what little details there were about the shooting. The Beatles' A Day in the Life began on the radio, and I opened my door and I saw my friend Bob Scopa, a New York music major. And it was ironic to see Scopa because his long hair and beard gave the impression of a Beatle lookalike circa Sgt. Pepper. I told him the news. He turned white. I sat back down on my bed, and it just seemed like I was traveling in a tunnel, a long, hollow void. I'd love to turn you on. In the background, from two stories below, the grand noise and laughter seemed to swell and distort, and then suddenly, silence. They'd heard the news. Oh boy. The party stopped. Everything just stopped. And silence for the rest of the night. The sisters canceled class the next day due to the large amounts of snow, but also in honor of John Lennon. They'd also canceled classes when Tennessee Williams and John Paul Sartre had died. And all, it was still, quiet all that day. White and quiet. Drifts of Beatles songs would pass through, and John Lennon song titles written on dorm windows seemed to float amongst the ice. The world was frozen in silence. A silence that 35 years later I now recognize as the loss of my generation's innocence. Yeah.
Welcome back to ArtSpeak Radio. This is Maria Vasquez-Boyd, 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio, a special edition of ArtSpeak Radio, Where Were You? On December 8, 1980, the fateful day when John Lennon was murdered by a crazed fan as he tried to enter his New York apartment. Up next, we have contributor John Thomas Todd, also known affectionately as John Todd, the radio god.
How are you doing?
Hi, honey. We love our John Todd. He's been involved in the music scene in Kansas City since he was a teenager and eventually becoming a professional musician and DJ, found his way to KKFI as a sound engineer with the Heartland Labor Forum, and eventually a DJ. And I love that you say that your mission at KKFI, do you know what it is? Do you remember?
Do I?
To find alternative underrepresented bands and give them the airplay they deserve.
Right, yes.
You wrote that, didn't you?
Yes, and we have a lot of that here in Kansas City.
Yeah, I love that. Now, John Todd's program, Under the Radar, airs Sunday evenings from 8 to 10 p.m. here on KKFI. And just tune in to discover what bands John unearths next. Wow, we love that.
I appreciate that introduction.
You betcha, honey. So where were you when John Lennon
was murdered? I was 15 years old at the time, and 1980, and I just turned 15 a few months before. And when John Lennon was murdered, it was just a few weeks after he came out with that double album. So it was just, you know, it was on the airwaves. It was great music. It was kind of something I'd been acquainted with the Beatles and John Lennon throughout the 70s growing up. And so it was kind of a thrill for me to hear this music. And then it was a shock to find out he was dead and he was murdered by a crazed fan. You know, the man actually stalked him and planned it. So that was kind of a little bit disconcerting that that would happen to, you know, someone, an icon in music like that. So, but I remember, but my introduction, and I was telling you the story before, my introduction to the Beatles is kind of, I thought it was kind of an interesting story how I came to know, become with the Beatles and John Lennon. When I was a kid, I was about, it was about 1970 or 1971, we had a foreign exchange student stay with us for that Christmas, and it was a Eugene from Nicaragua, and he was senior, he was pretty well together, and we lived within walking distance of Metcalf South, and so he snuck off to Metcalf South to buy us Christmas gifts. We didn't know that, but my mom was awful upset, and he was gone for a few hours, and she's ready to call the police, and he came back about 4:30, and he told, you know, Mrs. Todd, don't worry, we'll be okay, blah, 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 but he had unknowingly bought us all Christmas gifts. So I woke up that Christmas. He bought my brother, being 7 years older than me, he bought my brother Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. So I woke up that Christmas to Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, and I came out in the living room, and it's on the record player, and I'm looking at this album, the psychedelic album, and it's just, the vision of this album is blowing my mind. I'm like, oh my God, I'm like 5 or 6 years old. And I turned to my parents. I said, do you know about this? You know? And she said, oh yeah, they're the four lads from Liverpool, blah, 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 blah. They're on Ed Sullivan. And my mom, being from Scotland, was very familiar with that. And she said, oh, that's just skiffle music. You know, that was skiffle music that we grew up on. So she was well aware of that. So I thought that was a unique introduction to the Beatles. And after that, my brother became a huge Beatles fan, so everything Beatles that he could get his hand on, he had. And so I listened to the, you know, whole libraries of, you know, the solo work by all the Beatles following, you know, during the 70s. So and I would sneak into my brother's bedroom and play the records, and, you know, and probably scratch him, and he would get upset and tell my mom, and my mom just kind of didn't really do anything. And so there was that. So growing up during the 70s, I was listening to a lot of music. So, and I was, and, you know, George Harrison put out Concert for Bangladesh. Ringo Starr put out albums. Paul McCartney had Paul McCartney and Wings. But I kind of, for me, I was kind of, John Lennon had done some things. He'd done a rock and roll album. He'd done some other work. But I was kind of anticipating this album that came out right before he died. And when it came out, it was probably one of my favorite albums of all time anyway. So, but during the 70s, growing up, you know, like I would kind of keep abreast via my brother what was going on with the Beatles and stuff like that. And one unique incident, my brother bought one of the John Lennon album, and he was getting ready to play it, and he corralled my mother, and he said, here, listen to this song. And it was John Lennon's version of Working Class Hero. And my mother went crazy. I thought my brother was going to die that day, because my mother said, how can John Lennon be making a profit off of a working class song? And my mother, being from Scotland, came from a working class family, and she grew up singing all those songs, and she'd known him since she was a child. So she got, I think I departed the kitchen or wherever they were, and I hightailed it out of there, but I hadn't heard her voice get that loud and that abrasive. And I don't know what happened to the album or the record, if she broke it, if she took it, if he still has it, you know, whatever. But that was kind of an interesting experience, that she wasn't too happy about John Lennon making a profit off of a working class song. So that was kind of an interesting twist to the whole thing. And but growing up, in one of the songs, that one of my favorite songs that John Lennon did during that whole 70s period, was one he did with Elton John. And he did it, Whatever Gets You Through the Night. And so that was a little twist. So I really enjoyed that song quite a bit. So I actually brought it here on CD. So if you want to give that a spin, you can go do that. So,
yeah, you're listening to Art Speak Radio. This is Maria Vasquez Boyd. And that was John Todd. Well, not him performing, really, but John Todd, our radio god, is here in the studio and contributed a story to Where Were You When John Lennon Was Assassinated. And, John, you wanted to finish out with...
Well, I think a lot of people, you know, we think about John Lennon. He was an icon in music here, and he made history. But he empowered a generation of youth to pick up guitar and conquer the world, you know, and that wasn't the traditional route for people in that day and age. And, you know, and so for me, myself, generations before and generations to come, you know, he took over the world with an electric guitar, you know, and conquered it.
It's so true.
So,
yeah.
You know, and so you can go all over the world and meet people, and you can see the effect that John Lennon has had on the, you know, the entire world and people. So there is that. That is
well,
my take.
Well, and for so many of us, it was a soundtrack of our life. I mean,
that's
watching,
true too,
you know, us older kids watching the Beatles on Ed Sullivan, and then sort of following, you know, their career through through the ages, through the years, and all. So,
right.
John Todd, who do you have on your show coming up Sunday? Deer in headlights. That's okay.
I have to check. I was just texting him. I think they're called Gas, Food, and Lodging is the name of the band. Uh-huh. So,
because you always have some pretty outrageous music that's really great that we all should learn about. And so we thank you for that.
I appreciate that. That's what I try to do, just try to find some, you know, music that is not getting airplay that probably should be. And some of it, you know, you start to play. I've played songs and they've gone on to be used. And I played an artist. She calls herself Pony Boy, and she had a song used for the Gotham TV show, and she just had a song used last night on the Flash TV show.
Wow.
So that was things like that. So you kind of discover people who say, hey, this seems like a gem, and sometimes it turns out to be that way.
So, there you go. Well, thank you so much. Thank you, honey.
Thank you.
Also, I want to say thank you to Casey Don Roush, John Thomas Todd, Phil Keenan for their contributions to Where Were You When John Lennon Was Shot. Up next, we have gallery owner Tim Morrison and Bob Byerly, artist painter. Stay with us. You're listening to Art Speak Radio on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. Up next, we have Bob Byerly, artist painter who's showing at the 2010 Gallery. Also, Tim Morrison is here in the studio live. Welcome, my friends.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
You bet. And I want to say the 2010 Gallery is located at 9415 Knoll Avenue in Prairie Village, Kansas. And they've assembled a collection of traditional, figurative, and representational artworks by leading artists from across the globe. And their mission is to assist you in building an art collection that you love, that artwork that reflects your interests and holds the energy you wish to bring into your office or your home. So, yay, let's talk more about 2010 Gallery.
Sure.
Yeah,
Well, we kept the name 2010. We actually were down on the crossroads for about 7-8 years. We opened there in 2010. We were, I think, fairly popular gallery down there. We carried quite an eclectic mix of artwork, but decided to move to a larger space, and so now we're out in Prairie Village.
Yeah, and I know that having a larger space, you just have a bigger collection of work and opportunities for people to show their artwork, right?
Oh, definitely. Bob here has his own room. And even with the additional space, we still have, you know, artwork that's not even up. So we try to keep it in fresh and rotate the art. And we like to have lots of, you know, classes and events. So in addition to a larger space, we also have movable walls. Mm-hmm. So at least lets us change things out.
So how long has the 2010 Gallery been in existence?
Well, we began way back 2006. Technically, we were at an existing gallery years before that. We opened at Park Place out in Leawood. And so we were there for a short while, and then the boss decided, let's move down to the Arts District. And at that time, you know, the economy had gone downhill, you know, and things were changing, but And the Crossroads was a different space, I guess, different area at the time. It's grown so much since then.
It's just blossomed. It's just crazy. Yeah. Now, Bob Byerly is an artist and painter. And tell us about your work. What do you want us to know about your work?
My work, I have been influenced tremendously by Norman Rockwell and his telling of stories, you know, the American scene. I started out as an abstract painter and found out that I couldn't reach my viewers because they didn't know the story of abstract art. So I started painting more realistic, and then it became more and more realistic till I got to where they used to call it, or still do, fool the eye artwork. And then I started using children in my work, and I could tell a story. You know, Norman Rockwell could tell a story in one image. You think about his Saturday Evening Post covers. And he'd take a whole story, a whole movie, if you will, and show it in one image. And so that's what I was trying to do, and became the artwork itself became well known, and I was off and running.
Well, now, do you work in oils, acrylics?
I work in oil. I find that for the detail work that I do, slow drying paint, such as oil, works really the best.
And you know what? You just can't beat the smell. I mean, seriously. a little bit of linseed oil, a little bit.
You know, it's great that you said that, because when I went to college, my first 2 years, I was a pre-med student. And I had to take a fine arts course, so I went over to the art building and smelled the oil paint and the turpentine, and I was hooked. I was really hooked. This was fantastic. And so I called my mom and dad and said, guess who's not going to be a doctor? I'm going to be an artist. And my father said,
I bet that went
like
over well.
Out on the street corner. And I said, yeah, that's it.
And how many times have you accidentally drank that turpentine and linseed oil thing?
Thank heavens, not yet. And I haven't cut my ear off or anything like that. So.
Terrific. Yeah, we're glad of that. Now, Tim, also the 20 gallery space not only has a collection of traditional, figurative, and representational artworks, it's also available for private events, an event space, right?
Yes. I mean, hence the movable walls. It frees up a lot of open space if necessary. And then that way you're surrounded by fine art, you know, when you have an event there. So Bob's even taught classes. He did a month-long series of classes. We've had palette knife painting workshops. Goodness, just about everything so far. And you know, we even have a handmade market. We have a dozen artists this Saturday that will be there, you know, with handmade items. Local, all handmade.
We love that. And if you just tuned in to ArtSpeak Radio, I'm talking to Bob Byerly, which is Byerly. Your wife said, like Christmas, Byerly. Bob Byerly, artist and painter. Also, Tim Morrison, director, owner of the 2010 Gallery, director, slash, of 2010 Gallery. And that's located at 9415 Knoll Avenue, Prairie Village, Kansas. And a website for people to gain some more information.
Yep. We have a www, of course, 2010gallerykc.com. So, you know, any questions, and if anyone has, you know, information on artists that they would like to see, we're trying to bring some more emerging artists to the gallery. Even students, so if a student wants to do a student show and sometimes has to have a class as part of their senior event to complete, you know, the space is pretty open, and we really want to just promote artwork. It's a place that even artists love to come and hang out and speak with each other and learn from each other about things.
So as you mentioned, you know, a student wanting to show their work there, would you also work with them in helping them with the lighting and hanging the work itself, sort of, you know, all of the politics of showing?
Yeah, absolutely. You know,
exhibiting work.
Yeah, lighting is key. And we've had some of our actual artists send their students to us to learn a little bit about what it takes to get into a gallery, you know, how to submit your artwork properly, not just show up with a bunch of pieces in your car, you know. And so when we all share things electronically too amongst the gallery team, and we give feedback to the artists,
Yeah,
I think that's really important because it's great to be able to have that talent and to work on canvas or paper or whatever, but also there's an art to showing the work itself, again, with lighting and you know, placement.
Sure,
and that sort of thing.
Most artists actually are not good at promoting themselves. They're not businessmen. A few of ours are. Bob's good at that. I mean, he has all kinds of stories. I was fortunate to listen to one on the way here about him doing the art expo shows in New York and then doing galleries throughout the West Coast.
Yeah. And Bob, I if you could share contact information or a website with our listeners so that they may gain more information about your work.
Yeah. Bob at...
Byerly Art.
Thank you, Tim. At byerlyart.com. And that shows a lot of my paintings and ways to contact me.
Well, and your lovely wife was just showing me some work on the phone. So I saw what I could tell, a lot of detail. But how big are the pieces? Or are they smaller?
Well, they run anywhere from an 8 by 10 to 30 by 40.
Yeah.
So, of course, the larger the painting, the more the detail.
Sure.
And the longer time that it takes to paint it.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, Tim, you mentioned that there are classes available. Do you have any upcoming classes or
Well, we're waiting to hear
workshops?
About some more Bob Byerly classes since they were so successful and all the students were wanting to keep going. Mm-hmm. They didn't want to stop after the five-week period. We do have a class that's going to be another oil painting. It'll be more like a workshop.
Mm-hmm.
And they can always go and look at our calendar of events on the website. We hope to add them all the time. We're going to be at the point, hopefully, we're having a class at least every other week. That's the plan.
Mm-hmm. And do you have an age limit? I mean, do folks who are interested in your classes, do they have to be at least 12 years old, 16 years old, or
we leave that up to the artists.
Uh-huh.
And we have been planning on doing an actual kids class.
Oh, good.
A little more fun, and we'll try to contain it maybe in one area. But we're open for ideas and suggestions. We have all kinds of artists, obviously, there. We have an artist that does art on his iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
And and hopefully we'll get to do a class, maybe even digital art. Every medium, possibly even a clay or sculpting class.
And could you talk about the casual art history happy hours?
Okay. That's something we came up with, maybe just to get people out. It's like people on their way home. We might do that sometime during the week. So it's just a couple hour event where you stop by and it's very casual and you can discuss. We usually have a topic or a theme for that for that night. And like I said, that's another good opportunity even for artists to get together and talk about art and style, technique.
Yeah. Now, do you have holiday hours, or are they pretty much what are your hours?
We're open through the week right now, 9 to 5. Of course, anytime by appointment.
Mm-hmm.
We have the handmade markets every second Saturday of the month. But, of course, I get calls all times of the day.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of people who come in from out of town. They're here on Sunday even calling, wanting to maybe see some art.
Yeah.
But no, we're very flexible on that. But 9 to 5 typically just through the week, regular hours.
And this is 2010 Gallery at 9415 Knoll Avenue, Prairie Village, Kansas. Phone number is 816-283-3374. And the website?
Yes, website 2010gallerykc.com, so 2010 Gallery KC.
So do you have a full calendar for 2018, or are you still kind of...
No, we're working on it.
Yeah,
I'm telling you,
we
are working on it. I spoke with an artist today and just waiting to hear the dates. But once we know, they go right onto the calendar. And we send out emails, and people can sign up for email list if they'd like.
And if people are interested in finding out more information about having a private event in the gallery space...
Yeah, phone number. Mm-hmm. And also, they can email info@2010gallerykc.com. Any kind of event that we have, it's we're open to share the space. Like I said, give it... allow people to discuss art. We like to promote art, and we try not to be too stuffy of a gallery.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, so we have a full, I mean, we have entry-level art all the way up to Bob's amazing, intimidating to other artists work.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And Bob, are you pretty creative during this time, during the holiday season, or are you just kind of coasting and trying to figure out what to do next?
No, I'm just coasting. Yeah. No coasting. Yeah. No, I stay real busy. I do a lot of commission works, and I generally have to have those done by Christmas time, off to shipping. So it's not a coasting time for me.
You know, and something I wanted to ask you earlier when you talked about your education, where were you, where did you train at, or where did you go to school?
I got my bachelor's and master's degree from the University of Missouri at Columbia.
Oh, good.
And I taught there for a while, and then went on after my teaching, I went on to just the painting.
Nothing wrong with that, mister.
No. Some people say, when are you going to get a real job?
Go back into the medical field.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm ready.
I love that. Is there anything that we left out that we want to mention, upcoming events or classes, anything that...
I would say stay tuned for our announcement on Barley's next series of classes. Like I said, any level student could participate, but the style, the technique is just amazing. We've had our other artists that show at the gallery take his class, and just their mind is opened up by what else they can do and how they can improve their art.
So they would sign up through the website or give you a call at
call
the
me,
gallery?
Yes, call me, email me. Mm-hmm. We put it down, and our last class filled up, I think, in an hour and a half. Some artists will have a limit.
Holy guacamole.
Yeah. So if you do, or if you're interested in a class, definitely let us know as quick as possible.
Beautiful. Well, thank you so much, Bob Byerly and Tim Morrison.
Thank you so much for coming in today.
And that closes out this episode of Art Speak Radio. Stay tuned next week, which is, I believe that's the 13th of December. Next week, we have MG Salazar, Open Spaces. We're going to be talking with them, with Consuelo Cruz. Kevin Perry will also join us. Sunny Ruffin with the United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization will be up next Wednesday, noon to 1. Stay tuned. Please stay tuned for my lovely friend Jeff Harshbarger for Jazz in the Afternoon. I love saying it like that. He has a terrific collection of jazz that he's going to share with you. And following his show at 3 o'clock, Groovy Grant will be on following him. So, thank you so much for tuning in to ArtSpeak Radio. And find us on Facebook, like us, love us, download our podcast at kkfi.org. Honey, I'm coming home.